This podcast is a part of the Newhoff Media Podcast Network.
Good morning and welcome to Community Connection. Today we have another great show for you. We have Rita Manning here, and Rita is with OSF, and she is the coordinator of pastoral care for professional and bereavement coordination, I think. Something like that, Rita. Did I come close?
You're on the right track, yes.
So tell me, what does that mean, Rita?
Well, when folks come into a hospice care, it is a team approach. And part of the team is just kind of making sure of spiritual care needs. We all have spirits within us, and it's just kind of making sure we take care of that side in the end of life process. If there are any concerns, we try to address those and help process through because it is such a different phase of winding up a life. And then also the bereavement piece. Everybody's anticipating this loss, patient included, and just trying to provide support not only to the patient, but also to the family, both, you know, during that time of the end of life, as well as what we experience then afterwards. So it's kind of a combined position of both those things. Sometimes they get separated out depending on how high our census is. But right now we're able to keep those together and provide care on both sides of that.
Mm-hmm. So Rita, as you're talking, you know, I'm thinking about the dichotomy when a baby's born and the celebration and you're at the hospital and people come to the nursery and everyone's so excited, being on that end of the spectrum to moving towards the spectrum that you're on. And, you know, I often thought that I had a tough job at the college working with alternative students. But, you know, I would see your job as something that's really tough, and you probably see it as something that's a huge blessing.
Well, you know, I learned probably the most with this, with my own losses. I think what really, I was doing hospice care when my parents were still living. But, you know, when it becomes one of your own personal stories, it makes a significant impact. I was mainly doing the pastoral care or the spiritual piece ahead of time. But then after my mom died, boy, did I learn a lot. And I kind of shifted to more of that wanting to help others get through that time because of the things that I learned. And I don't want people to feel like they have to face that alone. I typically tell folks, I can't do your grieving for you, but I'm sure glad to walk next to you while you are going through yours, because that's probably the biggest thing that's most difficult, is you can't get anybody to do it for you. It's you're sole owner of that. And sometimes it's just knowing that you're not alone, and you've got a safe place to talk about all the emotions that's going on. It just kind of helps bring down some of that anxiety and just helps you get through.
Mm-hmm. Very early when I was in my college studies, I had a class called Death and Dying. Yes. And, you know, going through that and hearing the different stages, which weren't relevant at the time. But of course, the more you live, the more relevant that becomes. And so there are definitely steps to grieving.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I was just listening to a podcast yesterday by Pauline Boss. She's up in Minnesota. And she goes, you know, there's really no stages. Even Kubler-Ross herself recanted those stages. And it's just kind of, I often describe it as our emotions and feelings are like a tangled group of Christmas tree lights. Mm-hmm. You know, they just, once we start getting them sorted out, they just get all jumbled up again. And I think the thing that I encourage people most is to understand that there is a difference between grief and mourning. Grief is what we all carry within us. It's packaged up nicely inside. So we really don't have those x-ray vision and glasses to see how somebody else is doing. But the process of mourning is getting that out, whether it's through our words, whether it's through our tears. It's very much a thing of what our process needs to be. And when we allow ourselves to mourn, there's healing that's generally attached to that. And what people need most is to be able to share those stories, whether it's 100 times, maybe they need to share it 101 more time to work through something. Because with each time they tell the story, there's a little bit more processing and healing is taking place. So I think to me, it's more, if there were stages, I would say it's a process of we're learning to live with the loss. And so it is this balance of being able to grieve and mourn, get it out. But then there's also times of taking a break from that, escaping and being busy and doing other things. And it's this kind of back and forth motion alternating between those two worlds, again, to not be overwhelmed either way and to work at it at a day-by-day pace.
Mm-hmm. Yep, you're definitely putting some picture words into my mind. So let's take a quick break. We'll come back and then we'll pick up with the Christmas lights. I want to talk about that. And welcome back to Community Connection. We are with Rita Manning from OSF, and we were just talking about grief and hospice and some different things. You know, Rita, you were talking about the tangled Christmas lights, and I think, you know, that's exactly it. It's like you're all over the place, and you never know which piece you're going to be in at which time. I can be, again, with the loss of my mom, really, really difficult. And even though that's been 12, 14 years ago, it can still hit me. Yes. So, you know, just with the holidays and that, people, I think, are feeling it even more. Talk about making it through the Christmas holiday and then the new year, that type of thing.
Well, it is that realization and being realistic with yourself to know that holidays only come once a year and some hold more value in our memories and traditions, perhaps, than others. And so it's setting realistic expectations of, you know, holding back, maybe not doing quite as much as what you have done in the past. Personally, my mother died on January 1st. So that first holiday season was, oh my gosh, just very difficult to get through because you're on this replay loop of what was happening this time last year. And it's like you said, it's a roller coaster ride, and it's just like I'm ready to get off. So it is just kind of scaling back. I use the phrase of, you know, kind of taking your own pulse. Where am I at? How fast is my heart beating today? How do I need to slow this down? And be gentle with yourself because you may have been through other losses before, but not this one. And that's one of the most profound things to me is each individual relationship, there's not another one like it on the face of the earth. And why does this particular person's death affect me the way it is? Because there's not another one like it. And, you know, it starts to make more sense of, oh, that's why I feel this the way that I do. Or maybe I don't feel it as much. I wasn't as close to this person. It varies from relationship to relationship. But again, with holidays, you know, it's that who's going to carve the turkey? Who's gonna do that crazy Christmas sweater thing, you know, and all those memories that come with it. It just sets itself up to be a very potentially difficult time. And even having those conversations with family and friends ahead of time to say, look, you know, this is coming up. Just want you to know I might not be my normal self, but this is what I'm working through.
Mm-hmm. So Rita, let's talk about grace, you know, because as you were saying, you know, I'm thinking about my siblings as a great example. We each had that different relationship. And as you said, that's unique. So for me to understand, well, why can't we do this on mom's birthday and my sister being devastated as an example, we all had our own relationship and different triggers.
Yes. Well, and I I want to go back and just kind of make sure what your question is, because I got caught up in your example.
Different people. So for us to have grace, for example, me to understand why my sister can't do something on it, because it doesn't trigger me, but it triggers her.
Okay.
So having grace to understand that we are individuals.
And that's just it. Just making that obvious realization that everybody's relationship is different. I have worked with people in the past of, you know, very difficult family situations where there was different abuses, and some of the children were a part of that, some of them were not. And so the ones that were not, of course, they are feeling that more significantly, whereas the ones that were on the receiving end of that abuse are just like, this is a relief for me. And but it's hard for us to go there. It's hard for us to understand that, because somehow it just doesn't make sense to us. And that's one of the biggest frustrations of, we're trying to make sense of something that just doesn't make sense, and that we're each doing it in our own world.
Definitely. So Rita, what are some of the ways that we can cope with loss?
Coping with loss is challenging on different avenues. One thing I always want to make sure people understand are what is called grief bursts or grief attacks. Sometimes the word ambush is used, that you can be having a fairly decent day and you go into the store just to grab a loaf of bread, but over the PA system is playing your loved one's favorite song, and you have to turn around and leave, because it's like, I just came in for bread and here I am, a total mess here. Those are normal. I tell people, you just get broadsided. You don't see it coming. And it becomes a fight or flight response. I either need to get out of here or I need to fight through it. So understanding different things that are normal with grief helps us to cope with it, and being able to almost label it. Ah, you are grief and this is how you're affecting me. And it's my choice then how I'm going to respond. With each grief group, I do a reading called My Old Friend Grief. And the author does a great job to just describe what he's learned basically as a result of the death of his son, and what grief has done and what grief cannot do. And it's learning how, as you said, coping probably is best by talking about it, by journaling. Sometimes people will use their hobbies to express their grief. Again, I think that the long range goal is to realize I'm in the process of learning how to live with this loss until I take my last breath. And so it is I tell people, this is the lamest thing I can say, but just take one day at a time.
Yeah. So what about supporting those who are in grief? I mean, it is the hardest thing to walk into a funeral home, for instance, and, you know, what do you say?
You know, making things an open invitation. I know now is crazy busy with just dealing with the reality of what's just happened. But I want to be available to you as time goes on, because you're going to face different things. You know, I'm doing that much too wordy right now, but just I am here for you. This is an open invitation. I want to help. And I will talk to you later about that is sufficient. And those things can become more like, I'm going to bring you a meal. Watching the weather, depending on the age of the person and their capabilities, I'm going to help shovel your snow, put some salt down when it's icy, those types of things. I'm going to help you get to doctor's appointments. Again, just kind of depending on knowing that person and what their needs might be. Or just if there are times you just need to sit and talk or sit and cry. I want to be available to you to do that. And some of that, again, is knowing yourself and what your limitations are, and if you're best suited to help with specific things.
So Rita, I think I read a story, I think it was in Reader's Digest that I read, but this one person, his gift is to go shine their shoes to make sure, you know, so just picking something that you're good at or that other people don't think about that, you know, it just needs to be done. Another great example, I had somebody bring over a huge bag full of paper towels, toilet paper, plastic cups, plates, forks. And I'm like, you know, holding this, you know, because everyone else is bringing these casseroles, and I'm like, and then it hits me, I need all that. I really, really need all that.
Yes. So I don't have to do dishes, and yeah, all the above. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's so great. I think thinking outside of the box, as you're saying, how can you help support the family, mm-hmm. not only now, but ongoing, because again, those triggers will come, and you know, it may not be winter and you may walk outside and, you know, my husband used to shovel the walk and now there's nobody, or being elderly and just being incapable of doing certain things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a variety of things, and it's, again, if we're neighbors or family, if we know their routine and what their needs are, you know, that kind of helps us sort through that and maybe figure those things out a little bit more easily. Mm-hmm. It's the friends that we maybe don't hang out with as much but want to help that can be a little bit more challenging. But yeah, the example of the paper plates and those items it's a perfect example of something that thinking out of the box and mm-hmm. supporting.
Let's take our last break and then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about when grief comes to a critical point and then some classes that are offered through OSF. Welcome back to the final segment of Community Connection. We have Rita Manning with us from OSF. And Rita, you know, we were just talking about grief and how can we know when it's at a critical point, or what do we do when it's at a critical point?
Well, keeping an eye on a person to know normal things that happen with grief is obviously they can be sad. I usually instruct people, sleeping and eating can be a challenge. It can go either side of that coin, either being too much or too little. I know after the death of my mother, I had trouble with both. I couldn't sleep well. I would fall asleep and then wake up, you know, in the middle of the morning and couldn't get back to sleep. And eating can be a challenge. Sometimes it's eating too little. Sometimes it's not eating the correct things. But when you're noticing that a person is maybe not really taking care of themselves, they don't look showered, they look more disheveled than their normal, it's those things that you want to keep an eye on. And I very much encourage people after the death of a loved one to go see their primary care doctor, just letting them know what's happened. And because oftentimes there's been some caregiving involved and that person that's grieving is depleted in so many different ways, sleep deprivation and, you know, not getting the nutrition that they need. So that can sometimes set up things to go not so well in the grieving process because they just kind of build on one another. So making that trip in to just get checked out, making sure, and oftentimes there are assessments that the doctor will do as well to just kind of check their mental status as well. And just keep an eye on them and making sure that how they're doing holistically, physically, emotionally, spiritually, the whole realm.
Mm-hmm. And so you all offer classes.
Yes, we have, I do 4 sessions a year. The actual title of the grief workshops is called Making Sense of Your Grief. It's a combination of education and support. Because our society hasn't done a real good job to let us know what's normal with grief, we spend some time just talking about that each week and become a little bit more familiar with, oh, well, I know this isn't my normal, but with what she's telling me with grief, I'm totally normal. It's just, I'm not used to working through things right now under that lens. And so it's also support. It's giving time for people to talk, because again, I know that they need to mourn. They need to get their stories out. And so it's a combination of both these things. We meet for 6 weeks. We've got our first session coming up this year, mid-February. It's going to start on February 13th and go for 6 weeks. And then our spring session will begin in April and go to the end of May. Fall will be at the end, or excuse me, summer will be at the end of June and into July. And then our fall one will be September into October. So they're set up at different times. I know not everybody feels comfortable getting out in the winter. So if it works better for them to come when the weather's a little bit more calm and predictable, we've got different opportunities available. And it's open to all people. It's not just hospice families. It's open to community people as well.
Yep, that was going to be my next question. Is this something that just anybody can come to? And where will the meetings be held?
Right now, these will be held at the Heart of Mary Medical Center here in Champaign. We've got one of the conference rooms booked for those. We are trying to get things developed over in the Danville area as well. I'm not far enough along to give out any information on that. But people just need to call our office and register. It's not so much to save a space as for me to know how many books to order, because we do work on a book format to work through our sessions and just handouts that I have available to people.
Mm-hmm. And do you think it's, well, I think that you've already addressed this, but there's something about being able to talk about it or to hear other people talk about it, isn't there?
Yes. Yeah. And that's interesting, because I've had people come in and say, you know, I just wanted to come in and be a sponge and absorb as much as I could. But then so-and-so said something that just released the cork and I need to talk. And, you know, that's not uncommon. And I try to reassure people, you know, I never point blank go, Laura, what do you think about this? No, because I don't know what kind of day you've had. I don't know where you're at any given moment, because grief can change just like that. And I want to protect you. You've already had enough grief going on. So it truly is a voluntary. If you want to talk, you're welcome to talk. And also just setting some ground rules too of there may be other people. I may have everybody that wants to talk in the same session. So it's like, okay, we need to be sensitive to one another and give each other some time for that as well. But I always make that offering at the end. If you did not get to say what you needed to say, I want to set up a time with you, whether it's over the phone or one-on-one, because I realize how important this is.
Okay. Well, this has been a great show, really good information. And again, I think that sometimes the holidays really bring grief to the forefront, again, depending on what that relationship has looked like. So I appreciate you taking the time to come and speak with our audience. If people do have further questions, is there some type of some way they can contact you or a general office number?
Sure, absolutely. Our office number is 217-355-4120, and there of course is an option menu, and just hit number 7 and that'll get directly to our office, and our lovely administrative assistant usually knows where I'm at, so that works out.
Okay, great information. Well, again, we've been speaking with Rita Manning from OSF. You know, a sad topic, but a needed topic. You know, we're born, we're going to die. It's a fact of life. And, you know, having an opportunity to help with grief is an amazing thing, because it can be devastating. It is devastating. So, Rita, thank you for taking the time to be with us today.
Well, and thank you so much for the opportunity and share time with you this morning. Thank you.
You're welcome. Audience, we'll be back tomorrow with another show. Until then, I hope you have a good rest of the day.
You've been listening to the Newhoff Media Podcast Network. For more, visit newhoffmedia.com.